Hi everybody. I don't have my watch with me, so actually the recorder has a timer on it, so maybe I'll be able to tell that way. This is the last one, right? So thank you all for those who made it till the end. The end being Mishnah Hay in the first parak. But I really just want to thank you for the opportunity over the past 5 weeks. It's really been it's been nice for me to be able to learn through some of these Mishnayos a little more carefully than I have in the past, and it's been nice to share Torah together with you. And someone came over to me in shul and asked me, "Where in the world do you give those Pirkei Avos shiurim?" So I said, "I give them at the Hirsch Brick House on Thursday night." "Can you continue those in shul, maybe on Thursday night?" So you started something here. Now Be'ez Hashem in shul on Thursday night, we'll be having Pirkei Avos shiurim. It hasn't been announced yet, but people. Apparently, there's at least one person that wants. I'm gonna have one person there at least. So we'll hopefully. I don't know how many years it will take to go through all of Pirkei Avos if we do one Mishnah a week, but we'll eventually get there. So this week's Mishnah is Perek Aleph Mishnah Hey of Pirkei Avos. So if you recall, in Mishnah Dalid, we mentioned a pair of Tanaim. There was Yossi ben Yoezer Shreda and Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim. So we already said what Yossi ben Yoezer Shreda had to say in last week's Mishnah. What your home should be. Your home should be a meeting place for Chachamim, and how you should interact with Chachamim, that you should be Misabak Ba'afar Agleihem, Shosa B'Tzomas Tivreihem. Now, we move on to the second pairing, the second of that pair, Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim. And he also speaks about what your house is supposed to be like, how your home should look, and he writes and he says, "Yiveischa pasuach l'ravacha." You know what we're going to do this week? We're going to read the whole Mishnah, then we'll go back to explain, because that way we'll make sure that we finish the Mishnah. "Yiveischa pasuach l'ravacha." Your home should be open l'ravacha. What does l'ravacha mean? What does that word mean? It's a hard word to translate. Yeah, so like, yeah, open up your home wide, like make it like an open house. Make sure that there's plenty, that when you're good. So I was testing to see if I know it by heart. And make sure that there are poor people that are bnei bayis, that are your members of your house. And speaking to men, don't speak too much to women, right? Obviously, women could be mar besicha and women, but tar besicha meisha, speaking, you know, to men. Beishto amru, even by your wife, we say such things. Kal v'chomer beishas chavero, all the more so when it comes to somebody else's wife. Mikan amru chachamim, and based on this, the Chacham tell us kal amar besicha imaisha, anyone who speaks too much with women or with the woman, Goreim ra al yatzmo, he causes evil to befall himself. Ubotel mi divrei Torah, and he becomes botel from divrei Torah. He ends up not learning Torah. V'sofa yorish gehenim, and he's going to end up in gehenim. He's going to inherit gehenim in the end. So three things that happen to someone who's marvasicha meisha. Okay, now let's take a step back and let's try to unpack all of that. First thing that jumps out at you about this Mishnah, when you look at the whole Mishnah, what advice does Yochanan? If I ask you, if you had to summarize, what was the advice Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim just gave you, or gave us? Open your home, okay? But that's not the only advice, right?
He's kind of saying, like, use your time wisely, I think.
Use your time wisely? Why? Opening your home is using your time wisely?
Use your own chaslet.
Okay, meaning it's taking an opportunity,
like,
but...
People.
What?
It says, like, with the poor people.
Right, so all of that, it could have been any mitzvah would be using your time wisely, right? So what's he... Meaning, there seems to be, like, these bits of advice that don't really have much to do with each other. Beis Chalurvacha and Aniyim B'nei Beisacha, that makes sense. They fit together. That you should have, you should be generous with your home, and you should have poor people in your home. But then that third one doesn't seem to fit at all. V'altar B'sicha Meisha, and don't talk too much to women. What does that have to do with having poor people in your home, with doing chesed and giving tzedakah? And then the whole rest of the Mishnah is he just goes off on being Mar B'sicha Meisha. And when you do that, you know, these terrible things are going to happen. You're going to be Garim Ra'al Li'atzma, Botam Adivir Torah, Sofiyar Shganim. Also, not only do the two parts of the Mishnah don't seem to line up, why those three things? You know, I would say, if you were to tell a person who's, maybe he's a man, who's maybe too comfortable around women, and who hangs out with women too much, and talks with women too much, if you do this, right, if you do this, what's going to happen? Right? Why is this a bad thing to do? Why is this immoral? Why is this wrong? Why does the Ribbono Shel Olam not look favorably upon this? Right? When a parent has a high school son and they feel that he's hanging out with girls too much and they want to have that talk with him about why he shouldn't do it. What's the explanation? Do they say, because you are causing evil to befall yourself, you are going to be batel midivrei Torah, and ultimately you're going to hell. Right? Sofer Yorish Gehen. That's just a translation. It's not a bad word. Right? So is that how the conversation goes? One friend of mine told me his father was a chashver rav. Some of you may know this story, because you may know the father and the rav. And he told me that when he was in high school, his father said, you know, girls are like a museum. You can look, but you cannot touch. Also, you shouldn't look too much. that was the advice that he gave him. So is that the, you ever hear that story? Yeah. So how does that translate to? So let's take one at a time. So I think what Beischa Pesuach L'Ravacha means is quite simply that you should be generous with your home. There's a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi that tells us that Rabbi Akiva and his chaverim one time needed to go collecting from rich people to build the Beis Medrash. So they went, Mibayis Labayis, they went from one house to the next, and they started collecting money from all the Ashirim, wherever they could find it. They looked for the biggest houses, you know, the fanciest houses with the nicest cars in the driveway and a mezuzah on the doorway, and they knocked on the door to ask for money. They figured that's the way to do it. You know, the maisa that they say that a non-Jew asked his coworker, what's the story with these things on the doorways? And he said, oh, it offers protection, you know, mezuzah, it offers protection to the house. He said, oh, I want one. And he puts one up in his house, and then 2 weeks later he says, you can have it back. I keep getting these poor people knocking on my door asking for money. No, thank you. Right? But that's how you do it. So you go, and they ask for money, and they went to an Ashir Echad. And while they were still in the Prozdor Abayis, they were still in the entranceway of the house, they heard the child ask his father in the house, what should we buy for dinner tonight? We're going out to the store, we're going out to Gourmet Glot, what should we buy for dinner tonight? So the father said, go buy vegetables, but don't buy like the expensive new vegetables, buy the ones that they have left over from yesterday or the day before. And that'll be a little bit cheaper, they're not as fresh, but that's what you should have. And Rabbi Kiva and his friends are hearing this, that this is what the Balabais is saying. They thought he was such a rich guy. They decided they were too embarrassed to ask for anything. He obviously couldn't even afford fresh food for his family. So when he came to the door, he said, oh, I'm sorry, what can I help you, Rabbanim, with? They said, nothing, we're fine. So they said, what do you mean? You came here obviously for something. So why don't you ask me, why don't you give me the zchus of being able to be mishtatif with you? So they said, well, to be honest, we heard the conversation you just had with your child, and we obviously see that, you know, sometimes looks can be deceiving. Sometimes people you know, overreached on a big mortgage on a very big house, and they can't really afford it, and they're not going to move, and they're not going to sell it, but they really are having a hard time make ends meet. So you can't always judge a person just by externals. You can't judge a person's wealth by externals, by what it seems like a person has. There are people that fake it, especially in, you know, in those communities where there's an undue emphasis on gashmius. So there's a lot of pressure that people feel to present a certain amount of gashmius and a certain level of gashmius. Otherwise, they feel like a failure, because people actually have that hashkafa somewhere deep down that they judge success and failure in life by their bottom line, by how much money they have, and they therefore feel like a failure when they don't have as much money, so they present as if they do, but they don't. So you said, obviously you don't have. It looks like that, but you don't have. So he said, no. What's between me and my child? That's between me and my child. But you don't know what's between me and the Ribbono Shel Olam. He says, do me a favor. My wife is in the office. Go to my wife. Ask her for, tell her exactly what you need to build the building, to build the Beis Medrash. They went to the wife. She was makabel and makavod, and she said, you know, did my husband say I should give you an overflowing bag of gold coins, or just like an even bag of gold coins? He said, he just told us to ask you for a bag of gold coins. He didn't say overflowing. He said, okay, I'll give you overflowing. And you know what? If I'm wrong, then I'll take it, I'll deduct it from my ksuba. You know, my ksuba has enough money in it anyway, so I'll deduct whatever the difference is from my ksuba. And the husband came back, and he heard that what the wife had said, and he doubled her ksuba on the spot. He was so happy that she gave so much. But what happened? What was the conversation with the child? Says the Yerushalmi, because he wanted to live simply. He wanted to live b'tzimtzum. He wanted to live ba'anius. That's for himself. But pasuach l'ravacha, when it comes to guests, to spare no expense, when you could host other people, meaning, what would be so terrible if the nicest room in our house was the guest room? If the room that had everything that you could ever want was the guest room. You know, I've had the opportunity to travel to different communities at different times in my life, whether speaking or other things, or for simchas or whatever. Sometimes you go to someone's house and you could see they put so much thought into the guest room. I remember once when we were in England, went to an old friend of mine's house, and he had a little refrigerator there so that you shouldn't have to go down and ask for a drink and feel like you're raiding somebody else's refrigerator. A little, just like everything you could think of, they just already thought of and put in their guest room. That's pasuach l'ravacha. Would you do that for yourself? Maybe not. But for a guest, you're going to do that. Your home should be a place where people will feel comfortable, where you invest in, you know, a friend of mine told me that he did so much research into the exact kind of beds that he was going to order for his guest room. Because, okay, our family, they'll sleep on whatever. But when we have guests, we want to make sure that they're absolutely comfortable, that they're 100% comfortable. And there should be, when it comes to treating yourself, you could be a little stingy when it comes to treating yourself. You don't have to always spend so much on yourself. When it comes to your guests, when it comes to Achnas Sarchim, you shouldn't be stingy at all. I remember once when I was learning in Keren Biavne, I went to a relative. I used to always go every Shabbos that I was not in yeshiva, which was almost every Shabbos, every other Shabbos I would say, I used to go to my aunt, Allah Shalom in Rehovot, my aunt and uncle, and my grandfather. They lived down the block from each other. So I would always go there. It was just so comfortable, so convenient for me. It was 20 minutes away from the yeshiva, and a bus. It was just made life very, very easy for me. So, but there was one relative. My parents said, you should really go visit this relative. I didn't really know them, but my parents seemed to like really care. So I went to this relative. And it was so inspiring. They lived so simply. They lived very, very simply. And I overheard when they brought out meat to the table, I overheard the child say, Basar, we have like we have meat this Shabbos? Meaning they bought meat because there were American guests coming to their table. And normally they wouldn't eat meat. Now we're yeshiva bach and we're like, oh, awesome meat, and we ate the whole thing. Like the kid was like, you know, crestfallen. But we tried to save a little bit for him. But the idea that what they'll spend on themselves, that's one thing. But when you have guests, pasuach l'ravacha, to try to be as generous as you can. And that fits very nicely. If you are aniyim b'nei ve'secha, that you should have aniyim be b'nei ve'secha. Now it's so interesting. It doesn't say titein tzedakah l'aniyim. They should give tzedakah l'aniyim, which is really the mitzvah, right? The mitzvah is not b'nei ve'secha. What does b'nei ve'secha mean? B'nei ve'secha means that they should be a member of your household. Right, your grandfather, right? That's your grandparents. That's a member of the household. That's unusual. I remember when my sister got married. I have three sisters. When my sister Dalia, who married Chaim Reinheimer, who's at that time was just Chaim Reinheimer, from Fair Lawn, New Jersey, who's now Rosh Kollel in Eretz Yisrael, in Lechavia. So. The Yudins hosted a Shavuot Brach. And I don't mean to embarrass you. I'm just like, these are the stories that come to mind. When you look for Kavos, there are bound to be stories about your grandparents that come to mind. So the Yudins were hosting a Shavuot Brach because that's what they do. Someone from the shul gets married, they host a Shavuot Brach. So it was the first time I'd ever been to that house. I don't know. How many of you have been? I know you. How many have you been? Ah, okay. So my old friend from high school, Rabbi Andy Yudin, Rabbi Ari Yudin's a year younger than me, and we ended up becoming much closer friends in Keren Biavne and beyond in DRS. But Rabbi Andy Yudin was my friend from high school. We were the same age. We were in the same class together. He was, the popular kid that was good at basketball and so smart and good at everything. And, you know, I used to admire that. So we were friends. And he said, oh, let me give you a tour. His parents' house, and like he opened up doors, and there were like random families just like staying there. It's like, whose room is this? What do you mean, whose room? Whoever's there. He's like, oh, those people have been here for like 2.5 months. 2.5 months? What are you even talking about? And people just, yeah, my father found them on the street somewhere, so they're just been here for 2.5 months. How long are they staying? I don't know, until they decide to leave. Yeah, I mean, just like. Aniyim b'nei ve'secha. It's a very hard thing to do. I mean, that's quite a madrega. But at the very least, that it should feel like they're not just like outsiders, they're not just foreigners, they're not some, you know, I wrote the check and that's it. I gave the tzedakah, I wrote the check. You know, someone asked me, in our shul, we have a policy, and I'm not questioning anybody's policy one way or the other. We don't tell the aniyim to wait outside. They want to come collecting during davening, they come collecting during, and they walk around the shul and they come collecting during davening. Right, with COVID it was a little sticky, everything's a little sticky with COVID, but you know, the aniyim were coming, always come around collecting during davening. So we just had a discussion, some of the board members were asking me, why do we do that? You know, it's so disruptive to the davening. You know, why can't we'll ask each person that davens at the minyan to put a certain amount of money in your rabbinic discretionary rabbinic charity account, and then these people will come to you after. You'll write them a check. Why do we have them walking around all the time during davening collecting money? So one of the other members of the board and I both said, came out at the same time, because it's healthy for you to see what an ani looks like. It's healthy to see that there's a Jew that looks a little different than you that you can help out and actually see that Jew. Okay, you don't have to bring him home. You just have to move in for 3 months. You don't all have to be the Yudins, but it's okay to see that there's a human being there. Aniyim b'nei v'esecha. Aniyim shouldn't just be some recipient of a check. They should be b'nei v'esecha. They're human beings. They're people. They have struggles. And you should deal with them in such a way. The problem is, when you have a lot of people coming through your house, and this, I think, might be the bridge between the two parts of the Mishnah, you have a lot of people coming through your house, so what do you do to make people feel comfortable? So, obviously, you give them a nice room to stay in, you ask them if there's anything they need, and you make small talk. So you talk with all the people that are coming to your house. Who are the greatest Baalei Chesed in the history of the Jewish people, or the paradigms of Chesed in the history of the Jewish people, the people that we look to as the paradigms of Chesed? The very first Jews, right? Avram and Sarah, Beischa Pasuach Lervacha, the four doors on the tent, they're all sides, everyone coming in. But what do Chazal tell us? Avram Megayeres HaNashim, the Sarah Megayeres HaNashim. That even so, they did it B'derach Tznius. That Avram wasn't sitting there schmoozing with the women, and Sarah wasn't sitting there schmoozing with the men. That each were focusing on the people of the same gender as them. And not being marbesicha imeisha. Meaning one might, everyone knows that Chazal and the Torah itself are so careful about issues of arayos, about issues of inappropriate relationships between men and women. So of course, you know, a ben Torah or a bas Torah is not going to go out and just be marbesicha with the opposite gender. They're not going to do that. But what about when it's a mitzvah? So, you know, I'm opening my house. It sucks. So if I'm opening my house to tzedakah and ta'aniyim and based on pesuach l'ravacha, so what, maybe that's a heter, so I could do whatever I want. And Chazal said, be'ishto amr kal v'cham rebeishas chaveru. Very hard line to understand. Be'ishto amr? You're not even allowed to be marbas sicha imisha with your own wife? So that's why some of the Rishonim say, no, be'ishto means be'ishto nida. It means, Rabbeinu Yonah writes in the Mishnah, it means when the couple is not allowed to physically be together, so they should be careful about how they speak. And that's really referring to a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that when the couple is not allowed to physically be together, so the halacha is not that you're not allowed to speak a lot, but that you're not allowed to, the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch is lo yischok velo yakel rosh ima afilu bidvarim, the Rama adds. You shouldn't do schok and kalus rosh. I mean, you're allowed to talk about serious things. You can go to PTA together, and you can talk about all the things that you normally talk about and have regular conversation. How was your day? And this and that. But schok and kalus rosh. It shouldn't be the kind of conversation that's overly flirtatious, or the kinds of things, the kinds of activities that are overly flirtatious. Afilu bidvarim, even if it's just words that are flirtatious words. So that's even be'ishto nida, kal v'chomer, when it's eishes chaveru. Eishes chaveru means arayos. When it's somebody, I remember before I got married, my brother gave me what's called chasen shmuz. So they have chasen classes and kalva classes, and that, in my day, that was just pure halacha. I mean, Rabbi Neuberger and Rabbi Neuberger taught the chasanim, and it wasn't one-on-one. It was like 15 or 20 of us in a room with Rabbi Neuberger telling us the halachos, and Rebbetzin Neuberger had all the kallahs in the other room, right? It was in the Lincoln Square Synagogue in the Upper West Side. It was a class, Beforehand, we'd all go out to Dougie's. Like you saw 15 couples all out at Dougie's because I was on 72nd Street in the Upper West Side. So we ate our poppers and our skirt steaks at Dougie's, and then we'd go over to the Lincoln Square Synagogue, men in one room, women in the other room, and it was 15. But there was no hadracha about shalom bayis related things, and that didn't, you just didn't get it, b'chlal, unless you happen to know someone who wanted to teach you these things. So, because that's just the way it was. So my brother decided, I need a chasen shmuz. So one of the things that my brother taught, my brother was learning in the Kollel in Ner Yisrael at the time. So one of the things that he told me, a lot of very valuable things, very important things. But one of the things that he told me is that sometimes a couple gets married and they think that now it's mutter to talk to. You always thought that you're not allowed to hang out with girls, but now that you're married, you can hang out with girls all you want. It's just they're your friends' wives and your wife's friends. And he said, Al tar b'sicha m'isha still applies, meaning the general tone when couples get together should really be obviously you interact, hello, how are you doing, whatever, polite and nice and all that. But the general tone should be, and normally it gravitates to this way anyway, is that the men end up talking to the other men about men type of things, and the women end up talking to the every once in a while, like we have a lot of couples over for lunch, a number of families over for Shabbos lunch. So like, there's always like that one guy that's awkward. Everyone's next to their wife, so there's that one guy that's like a little bit removed, and he ends up like right in the middle of the shaitel conversation, and he's like ready to blow his brains out. He's like, please extract me from this conversation. So at some points, you'll see like he'll just get up and just like move to the other end of the table. So that's way it should gravitate. It should gravitate that way. That there should be, there's obviously everyone's always nice and kind and whatever, but and even when you think that there's a heter because you're a beischa pesuach l'ravacha. And therefore, when we're talking about al tabasicha me'isha, by the way, the Gemara takes us to an unbelievable extreme. The Gemara tells the story. I'm sure you're probably familiar with the story. The Gemara tells the story with Bruria, right? That who was it? That someone asked her. One of the Chachamim asked her, "Eze derech neilich lulud? What's the best way to get to Lud?" Simple directions. I was asking. It was before Waze. That was the only. It used to be that when you'd get lost, you have to pull into a gas station, go over to the smartest man you know, the guy who pumps the gas, and say, "How do you get to this highway?" And you would trust whatever he told you, and that could send you in the totally wrong direction for hours and hours. Or every once in a while, you got an honest guy, and he told you the right thing, and that was the only way to find your way. There was nothing else. You could take out maps. People used to have maps in the car and try to figure that out. But there was no ways. There was no there's no simple way to do it. So he asked, "How do you get to? What is the path to get to Lud?" And she said, "You're a Talmud Chacham. Don't you know Altar B'sicha Me'isha? You should say Be'eza L'lud. You said Be'eza Derech Nelech L'lud. Two extra. You said four words. You could have said two. You said two extra words. Wow, that's quite a madrega that she expected of him to not even say that. Okay, but Altar B'sicha Me'isha. So what's going to happen when you're Mar B'sicha Me'isha? When a man is Mar B'sicha Me'isha? By the way, it happens to be that for a woman." From the woman's side, it's also not recommended, but it doesn't seem to be nearly as bad. The Gemara tells us that Shaul HaMelech was such a handsome guy. He was Mishuchma Lamayli, he was extremely tall, and tall normally means impressive looking, and he was a very good looking man, and when women would talk to him, they would try to carry on the conversation for as long as they possibly could. We'd just be talking and talking, like just to try to get, because he was so pleasant to look at. And the Gemara doesn't sound like that was a terrible avera for the women, as opposed to for a man to try to do that with a woman, that it seems to be a much worse avera. It's not something that's recommended, but it seems to be a little bit worse. From there are tshuvas like this from Moshe and others that there are isurim, obviously, in both directions, but there is a little bit of a difference between from the man's side and from the woman's side. It just happens to be. I'm not going to go into the whole halachic discourse now. That's not the point of tonight's shiur. So says the Mishnah, what's going to happen? You're going to be gorim ra'al atzmo botel mitivir Torah sofi yorish gehenim. So what does that mean? So I just heard, like 2 minutes before I came here, Rabbi Daniel Gladstein spoke in the shul, and he said over a beautiful vart from the Vilna Gaon. Where the Vilna Gaon, I think we may have spoken about this idea. The Vilna Gaon writes in a couple of places. I always quote it from the Gra in Mishlei. He says it's a Gra in Devarim also. I didn't even know. The Vilna Gaon tells us that we often think of mitzvahs as ben adam l'chaveru and ben adam l'makom. There are mitzvahs I do with other people, mitzvahs I do with Ribbono Shel Olam. Did we talk about this idea yet in any of these shiurim? The Vilna Gaon says there's a third category. Third category. What's the third category? Ben adam l'atzmo. Right, so it's a great chiddush of the Vilna Gaon that normally we think of two luchos. So one is ben adam l'chaveru, ben adam l'makom. The second is ben adam l'chaveru. Kibud aveim is the bridge because you know it's a little bit of both. And chaschinuch mitzvah gimel isn't sure what is kibud aveim, one or the other. Okay, maybe it's both. But the Gras says no. There's ben adam l'atzmo. What is ben adam l'atzmo? So ben adam l'atzmo just means midos, to be a better person, even if it affects nobody, and even if it doesn't really even affect your avodas Hashem. It's just to be a better person. The Ribbono Shel Olam endowed each of us with potential, and we are supposed to live up to that potential. Says Vilna Gaon, you know, we spoke about Torah, avoda, gemilas chasadim being the three amudei olam. Maybe this is where we mentioned it, that Torah, when it comes to gemilas chasadim, what kind of mitzvah is that? What kind of category is that? Ben adam. Good. Avoda. Avoda, bring karbanos. Davening. Avoda shablev chazal says we tefillah. That's bin adam lamakom. Torah, bin adam la'atzmo. When a person learns Torah, a person enhances themselves. We become greater. We become better people. It makes an impact on who we are. Similarly, when it comes to the major averos, the three big averos that are Yahari Gval Yavar, so there are three of them. What are the three Yahari Gval Yavar averos? You have to die rather than violate the averos. Shvichas Dam, that's Ben Adam. Sorry, Shvichas Dam, Ben Adam. A Chavero, right? It's pretty much the worst Ben Adam the Chavero you can commit is to murder the other person, right? Avodah Zarah. Ben Adam L'makom. It's the worst Ben Adam L'makom you can commit. Say, God, no thanks. I'm going to take this one instead, right? And then what's the other one? Gilei Arayos. Is that directly angled at God? Is it doing something to God? Does it hurt the other person? The other person is a willing participant. It's not talking about that person, Rahman al-Slan, is ma'ani someone else, forces somebody else into some type of thing. No, Gilei Arayos. Two consenting adults that just happen to be married to other people, and they commit Gilei Arayos. What's that, says the Vilna Gaon? That's Ben Adam La'atzmo. Then look what you've become. You've become the kind of person that's disloyal, that's unfaithful. And it's gonna and you know what? When you do that kind of thing, you're gonna be racked with guilt for the rest of your life. It's gonna eat you up inside. And you're gonna fall apart. And that's Ben Adam La'atzmo. It's the worst Avera Ben Adam La'atzmo. So in the very Mishnah that tells us that a person should not be marbe sicha me'isha. Why should we not be marbe sicha me'isha? Because that's going to lead to inappropriate relationships. So what does it tell us is going to happen? If you are marbe sicha me'isha, look how beautifully it works out. Goreim ra'a to who? La'atzmo. Goreim ra'a la'atzmo, the Mishnah says. That's one thing that happens, that you're goreim ra'a la'atzmo. Because it's a violation of bin adam la'atzmo. It's the worst avera, bin adam la'atzmo. Oh, what do we say on the positive side? How do you build Ben Adam La'atzmo? How do you build Ben Adam La'atzmo? What do we say? Which of the three mitzvahs builds Ben Adam La'atzmo?
Torah.
What's the second thing? Ubotel midivrei Torah. When you destroy yourself, you can end up being mevatel divrei Torah. You can end up not being able to recognize your own vast potential that normally comes through Torah. And such an interesting phrase. V'sofo yoresh gehen. If you say that someone is going to end up in the bad place. I'm not going to say that word again, right? End up in the bad place. How do you say? He is going to... Oh, you don't say the whole phrase, but what would you say? When someone says something that nice. He can... What? He can inherit Gehenna. No one says that. What do you say? Let him go to... But you don't say inherit, you say go to. Go to H-E double hockey sticks. You don't say inherit. What does inherit mean? What's an inheritance?
Like
you earn. So inheritance is actually the opposite of what you earn.
Maybe it's like you
inheritance is something that's been there the whole time. When you're in Gehenna, it hasn't been there the whole time. Meaning, when you lived your life, if you went to Gehenna because of violations of Ben Adam L'Makom and Ben Adam L'Chaveru, your life may have been lots of fun. With all those Ben Adam L'Chaveru, Ben Adam L'Makom Averos, you may have really, really enjoyed life. And then you're going to go to Gehenna.
and it will be a new experience, because life was really great. Afterlife, not so great. But when a person violates Ben Adam La'atzmo, when a person feels that they're falling apart spiritually, when a person feels that they're not meeting their potential, you know when they really start their Gehenim? Here. They start their Gehenim here. And then when they end up in Gehenim afterwards, they're just being Yoresh Gehenim. It was something that was there the whole time. Who did they inherit it from? Themselves. They had it their whole lives. It's not bad enough. Their afterlife is going to be Gehenim. Their life itself is going to be Gehenim. So now if we had to summarize Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim's message, the message is to build ourselves up. How do we build ourselves up? First of all, recognize the greatness in everybody else. Open up your homes. Treat others with respect. Let aniyim be b'nei ve'secha. Don't look at people as someone who's beneath you. Everyone is worthy of your respect. And then ultimately respect yourself. Don't do those things that are going to be the ultimate violation of Bein Adam La'atzmo. Don't do those things that are going to lead to Arayos, which is the worst Avera Bein Adam La'atzmo, and are going to lead to Bittul from Divrei Torah, which Divrei Torah is the greatest mitzvah Bein Adam La'atzmo. That's Gorim Ra La'atzmo. It's both of the Divrei Torah. And you're going to realize that when you do that, it's Sofa Yoresh Gehenim. Not just you're going to Yelech L'Gehenim. Yoresh Gehenim, because the Gehenim is already going to start over here. But of course, we don't want to end with the word Gehenim after all, you know, 6 weeks of learning together. So, or 5 weeks. So we're going to end with the positive. But obviously, if a person recognizes that Torah is something that should be utilized to improve ourselves, and that's what the learning of Pirkei Avos is. We learn Pirkei Avos because that's the mesechta about self-improvement, about how to make ourselves better people. So that's going to be Gorem Tova Liatzmo. That's going to cause us to want to learn more Divrei Torah. And Sofo, Yoresh Gan Eden. We're going to be Yoresh Gan Eden, because when you live in such a way in this world, your life is so fulfilling. The Gan Eden starts down here. And then ultimately the Gan Eden, which should be Zohar, should continue La'achris Hayamim as well. Okay, everyone have a great shot.